Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just to follow up on that, unifying crime reporting statistics, numbers from your own Border Patrol, numbers from this government show that the amount of illegal immigrants are down. There is not violence on the border. And that
there's
most
not violence on the
there's
border?
Not as much violence
oh, really?
As
let me, you had wait 26 minute, wait, people
let me finish the
killed.
Question please let me finish the question
2 weeks
please.
Ago 26 people were killed in a gunfight on the border.
I understand what you're
a
saying.
A mile away from where I went.
I was there. I understand. That's not the question. The question is,
do we forget about that?
No, I'm not forgetting about it. I'm asking you to clarify where you get your numbers, because most of the DEA crimes reporting statistics that we see show that drugs are coming across at the ports of entry, that illegal immigration is down, and the violence is down. Okay. So what do you base okay. your facts
let me,
on?
Come on, let's go.
Sort and
of,
secondly...
Sort of, no, no, you get one. You get
well,
one.
Well, the second
just
question
sit down.
Is,
wait, sit down. Sit down.
Could you please
sit
answer
sit down.
It?
You get one question. I get my numbers from a lot of sources, like Homeland Security, primarily. And the numbers that I have from Homeland Security are a disaster. And you know what else is a disaster? The numbers that come out of Homeland Security, Kirsten, for the cost that we spend and the money that we lose because of illegal immigration. Billions and billions of dollars a month. Billions and billions of dollars. And it's unnecessary.
So your own government stats are wrong, are you saying?
No, no. I use many stats.
Could you share those stats with us?
Let me tell you, you have stats that are far worse than the ones that I use. But I use many stats, but I also use Homeland Security. All right, next
and
question.
And do you, wait a minute, just a quick follow-up.
No. Go.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Zeska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, June 12, 2019, and this is the interview edition of the Bob Zeska Show. My guest today is coming to us live from the White House. Brian Karam is the White House correspondent for Playboy, but as you'll learn, he's been covering the presidency since the Reagan administration. You might also know Brian from his tough questioning of both Sarah Sanders and Donald Trump himself. In fact, we played his best-known confrontation with Trump at the top of the show today. Watch for his forthcoming book, Just Ask the Question. By the way, if you like what you hear, please make sure to support this show by subscribing at BobSeskaShow.com or Patreon.com/BobSeskaShow. And now my conversation with the great Brian Karam at the White House.
Hello?
Brian Karam, it's Bob Zeska. How are you?
Hey, Bob. How are you doing?
Great, great. Live from the White House, Brian Karam from Playboy magazine. All right, now, if anyone from the administration wanders by, you have to put them on the phone for me. Just say, hey, this guy wants to talk to you.
If that happens, I will. It probably won't. They'll see me and turn around and go the other way.
Are you inside the building right now?
Yeah. But in fact, give me a second. Can you call me back in about 2 minutes? I'll walk outside where the reception is better and we can talk.
It sounds good right now. I mean, it's actually kind of cool, too, that you're inside the White House. The call is coming from inside the building. So if anything goes haywire, maybe we can reset that way. But for now, everything sounds good.
Okay.
All right. And by the way, what are the rules for having your cell phone inside the White House? I thought they were confiscating those things.
Well, that would be if you work for them, but I don't work for them. White House.
Right. Okay. I wasn't
sure.
They
would not have me work for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yes. And we're going to get into many reasons why here in a second. But yeah, I thought it was an across the board thing, like no more phones, no more laptops inside the building. But you're saying it's only for the administration, right?
Right. For those who work at the White House, for those who work here for other organizations, it's not a.
Gotcha.
It's not a thing.
Yeah. Well, I'm sitting up here in Germantown, Maryland, Montgomery County, your old stomping grounds. You wrote for the Montgomery County. Oh, my God.
I ran the.
What was that sound? What did I just hear in the background?
I was walking past the bathroom.
Ah, okay. So what was going on in there? Was Jim Acosta taking a crap or something? What was...
I don't know what was going on there. I walked past it.
Okay. Gotcha. So you wrote for the Montgomery County Sentinel, which every time I see that name, I always think of the Michael Keaton movie, The Paper, you know, where Spalding Gray says, "We're the Sentinel. We cover the world."
So, and he goes, "I don't fucking care. I don't fucking work in work. I work in fucking New York City. So fuck yourself." Yeah.
Awesome.
I love that.
One of my all-time favorite journalism movies. Totally underrated and just such a great, great tight script and an incredible film. Just an inside look at the inner workings of a New York newspaper. But so you started at the Montgomery County Sentinel. How did you end up all the way now working inside the White House?
Well, I didn't start at the Sentinel. I ran those two papers for a few years while my kids were in school. I started out covering the White House in 86 with Ronald Reagan, and then I've covered every presidential race since 84.
Since 84?
So, I worked at Fox News, and I worked at NBC, and I was at America's Most Wanted for 5 years.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I had no idea. America's Most Wanted. How do you end up going from covering the White House over to working on America's Most Wanted?
Well, I came to the Washington, D.C. area in 91.
Yeah.
After I got into a disagreement with then President George Bush in a news conference in San Antonio, Texas. I was a political reporter at the NBC affiliate there, and I just got back from the Gulf War. I'd spent about 4 or 5 years covering the drug problem on the border, and so I'd asked President Bush a question. He told me to sit down as well, and I didn't.
Outstanding.
And so that's how I ended up in D.C.
So your history asking tough questions of presidents goes back, a few decades now. So you're in there and you're asking the tough questions that maybe some of the majors aren't asking, or do you feel?
Well, I think everybody asks good questions. Defend everybody in the press corps that works here. I think every one of us are just trying to get our questions answered. There's no such thing as a bad question. There are only bad answers. Yeah. I think every reporter here does their level best to ask a question that's relevant to the people of the United States. And it behooves the president to respect the questions and answer them rather than to demean the question.
Yeah.
And so I don't think there's any reporter here who is here to do anything other than their job.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, but just a matter of contrast. I mean, there's a marked difference between watching you ask a question of the president. Say, for example, we're going to talk here in a second about you questioning Trump in the Rose Garden about his border statistics. There's a difference between that and some of the questions we often get, where I notice that you take a harder line approach than most. And that's not to besmirch the jobs of the rest of the press corps. I'm just saying that
you tend to
lean in a lot more than some of the other members of the White House press corps. What's the overall mood right now among your colleagues in the press room? Are you guys exasperated, energized? I would imagine morale has never been lower, huh?
Well, we're here to do our job, and we do our job every day. And regardless of who's here or what the issues are. So you just try to keep your head down and do your job. Some people make it more difficult than others. This president is remarkably good at making it difficult. I've never had anyone call me the enemy of the people before.
Yeah.
I never had death threats before this guy. But nonetheless, the morale is, I mean, we're just here. We're just professionals doing our job, man. And So, yeah, it's exasperating, to say the least. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't stop you from doing what you're doing.
Do you guys take the enemy the people thing seriously, or does it just get tossed
of
under
course,
the pile with
you,
everything else?
You ask anybody here. Yeah. Like I said, you ask anybody here, and that is something that is on your mind no matter what you're doing and no matter who you are.
Yeah.
From, you know, a community newspaper to a network television station, you are having to deal with the fact that the president of the United States has determined that you are the enemy of the people instead of one of the people, and that there are people who will follow him and will believe that as well. And that's just not the case. And it's very difficult for us to push back because we come, you know, it's not a level playing field. These aren't two people having a disagreement on the playground. This is the president of the United States, and there's an awful lot of power in that office. And I respect that office, but I do my job, and that is to ask questions. And I will ask what I believe are appropriate questions to the president of the United States or anyone else for that matter. And I don't want to go over the line and, you know, I'm not going to walk out of the place. We're not going to hold hands in solidarity. We're not going to storm the Bastille. We're going to do our job.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what everyone has to remember, is that, you know, we're not activists, we're reporters.
Yeah.
And some of us write columns and some of us write news, but all of us are here simply to get answers. And it's not wrong for the president of the United States and his people to want to put his best foot forward. It was Larry Speaks who said, you know, don't tell us how to stage the news. We won't tell you how to report the news. The difference with this president is he wants to stage the news, tell us how to report the news, and then at the end of the day, tell us it was wrong what we did. So that's the marked difference between this president and others.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a difficult situation to be in, a difficult situation to work in. It makes everyone's job that much more difficult to do, and it makes everyone's job that much more stressful.
Yeah.
But like I said, I hats off to everybody in the press corps here at the White House, because they're all just doing their job.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And now your job covering the president includes getting death threats. I mean, what does your email look like these days? I assume that you get death threats every time you open your mouth in the press room. Is that the case?
Well, I get overt threats. I've had a couple of direct threats. One guy called me up and said he was going to kill me. I said, no, you're not going to kill me. He said, yeah, I'm going to kill you. I said, no. Right now, you're sitting in your mother's basement. You're fat. You're overweight. You haven't worked in 3 years. You're eating Cheetos, and you can't get a date. Nobody likes you. And there was a long silence on the end of the phone. And then he said, you're mean. I go, I'm mean. You called me up to threaten to kill me, and I mean,
no way.
Go after yourself. And I hung up on him. So
his response was, you're being mean? My God.
Yeah.
The victimhood syndrome among these people is staggering.
Well, the victim syndrome goes both ways, too. There's people on the far left who feel that Bernie Bros and such, who feel that they were victimized. Yeah. And I think that's the problem. Everybody's looking for a victim and not taking responsibility. But that's just me. Hey.
Jesus. And do you, because clearly you took a just as an aggressive approach with this guy calling you up and saying he's going to kill you and then whining as soon as you're mean to him back. You know, is this something that you take seriously, or do you kind of?
Have to take him seriously. Yeah. But here's the deal. Look, if you're going to try to whack a White House reporter.
Yeah.
And take on the White House. I mean, you're going to climb over a fence. There's Secret Service there. You're going to be turned into Swiss cheese before you get five steps into the building.
Yeah.
So I'm not really worried about that. My concern is for the young journalist who's just starting out somewhere, who's working in, I don't know, Pocatello, Idaho, or, you know, or North Dakota, or anywhere. Germantown, Maryland. Maybe it's the first job in the business, and you go out to cover a county fair, and some, you know, right-wing nutcase nationalist racist decides that they're going to do, you know, they're going to make a political statement and take you out.
Mm-hmm.
That is a softer, easier target, and that's the real target that you need to worry about.
Yeah.
And that's the real issue facing the press. And let's be honest, the national press, the White House press corps, is not the enemy of the people.
and we're not fake news.
Right.
And when you lump everyone into that and call everyone fake news, then everyone across the world, the President of the United States, has incited and helped undermine the First Amendment and the rights and free speech all around the world.
Yeah.
And you take a look at where the best journalism, the most important journalism is done, is at the community journalism level.
Yeah.
Well, Peter Alexander does the best work at the White House. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Peter just walked by, so I had to say that.
Yeah, he was great. He was right there in the thick of that whole thing in the, in the East Room?
But community journalism is, and so if you're going to compare us and call us all fake media, what you're doing is you're putting at odds and at risk the people who are going out and covering high school football games and the city council meetings and the county council meetings and state legislatures. You're giving a roadmap to crooked politicians everywhere to use that term and that phrase to go after legitimate reporting. And that is the real challenge, and that is the real threat, and that is what he either doesn't care or knows about and doesn't and is happy to do it. And that's what we've got to get past.
Yeah.
And that's hard to do.
As a citizen, though, I mean, put your role as a journalist aside. I mean, as a citizen, the President of the United States calling you out and taking such an opposition approach to what you do, how does that make you feel? I mean, how does that sit with you as an American to know that your president has such contempt for what you do? The disconnect there has got to be disillusioning, to say the least, huh?
Well, you cannot allow your personal feelings to interfere with the job that you do.
Yeah.
So there has to be a disconnect between the personal feelings and the job that you do. There's no other way around it. If you get involved with your feelings too much, you're pretty well screwed in being able to do your job.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't do that. As far as being a citizen of the United States, I'm exercising my rights as a citizen of the United States, being here and asking questions. So that you try to keep that in perspective as well.
Well, it seems to me as if, like, past presidents, for example, would criticize the press. I mean, this is nothing new, presidents criticizing the press corps. But at the same time, the president also understood the nature of the First Amendment. The president also understood your mandate as a journalist. And the president also was, you know, reasonably friendly in past administrations with the press corps when, you know, everyone, when you were in downtime, you're on Air Force One, you're traveling, you know, there's some conversation there that goes on off the record, and there's a less adversarial approach and more of a collegial approach when guards are down, but not anymore.
There's always going to be an adversarial relationship between the President of the United States and the press corps.
Mm-hmm.
The president wants to put his best foot forward. The press corps is there to find out what's really going on.
Yeah.
As I said earlier, the difference is this president is far more thin-skinned and does not takes everything as a personal slight.
Yeah.
And that's probably has to do with the fact that how he became president. And I can understand his although I understand it, I don't sympathize or empathize with it, but I do understand why he feels the way he feels. But nonetheless, we're still there to do a job. Yeah. And in the past, presidents have recognize the adversarial relationship, and still at the same time, as you pointed out, we're able to have some personal relationships with members of the press, and still was able to have a somewhat collegial relationship with most members of the press.
Yeah.
But this president hasn't come to the White House Correspondents Association dinner. This president has continued to call, as recently as yesterday on, you know, the South Lawn, called us fake news. So he's got his he's set his train down a certain path, and he hasn't veered. And whatever else you may say about this president, one of the things you have to give him is when he picks a message, he stays focused on his message, and he has not veered away from his three-word slogans: build the wall, lock her up, we're fake news. He stays on his tasks.
Yeah, in fact, you know, a lot of people criticize his lack of experience in politics, but I've never seen anyone with the kind of message discipline that he has. And that's not necessarily a good thing in this case, but, you know, I think
message discipline is a good thing because it does denote transparency.
Yeah.
And when he says he's the most transparent president in the history of the United States, although you may not like him, you have to acknowledge the fact that he is fairly transparent. He may not know what he's doing from day to day. That's transparent.
Yeah.
But when he does know what he's doing and he does it, he continues to do it and he stays focused and his message discipline is, and that's why he's successful.
Yeah.
Because he has a base that he plays to and he stays on that note. You know, you may call him a one trick pony, I saw a sign today that compared him to Howard Beale from the, you know, the movie Network. You know, I'm mad as hell. I'm not going to take it anymore.
Yeah.
That he's, you know, that kind of guy, mad as a hatter. Mm-hmm. And you may think he's that, but he does have message discipline and he does know how to foment his base and get him out and active.
Well, message discipline aside, I mean, what sets Trump apart from, let's say, Barack Obama, George W. Bush, as far as transparency goes?
Well, we know what, well, if you want me to criticize Obama, I'll go back to the 9 times that he used the Espionage Act and pretended like he was a friend of the press. That still angers me.
Yeah.
You know, pretended he was, if, you know, he was the savior of the Democratic Party, yet Donald Trump is a direct result of the fact that Barack Obama didn't build the bench strength of the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is so completely inept that they can't even they couldn't go out and they didn't even campaign in Michigan in 2016.
Yeah.
Trump himself said, you know, that was an election they should have won. Everyone thought that they were going to win,
yeah,
but they didn't. Now, you may say that it was Russian collusion, and yes, you would be correct. But nonetheless, fewer people voted in the 2016 election, and a lot of the Democrats didn't turn out. So the Democrats who pretend to be, you know, the party of the people in the big tent are not as transparent as Trump. And Trump is very transparent. He wants it his way. He wants it his way now. And if you don't give it to him his way now, he's going to scream, yell, rant, and rave about it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's really no, I mean, anybody who pretends like there's any great depth or hidden meaning to what Donald Trump does doesn't understand Donald Trump.
Yeah, that's
Donald
true.
Trump is about one person, yeah. Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very transparent.
Yeah, he seems transparent about what he's thinking. And I don't know if that's necessarily for his own purposes. I don't know if politically that's a good idea or not. But I mean, the fact is that at least we know what he's thinking. That's why I always say having his Twitter feed there and monitoring his Twitter feed is fairly valuable. It's important to know what the president is saying and thinking from time to time.
Well, he likes that instead of a dialogue with people.
Yeah.
So again, he's being transparent as a demagogue.
Right, right.
He is not, when I say transparent, you know who he is. I'm
right.
not saying that he's being transparent in giving information to the American public.
Yeah,
those are two different issues.
Yeah.
And as far as transparency goes, we know who Donald Trump is. If you don't know who Donald Trump is, you're living under a rock.
That's right.
But if you think Donald Trump is being transparent and providing information to the American public, I would say that you are grossly in error.
Now, you know, and I assume you've covered his rallies in the past. When he does when he does that thing where he points you out and he says, look at all of those people there. They're all of those fake news. When that happens and you're surrounded by Donald Trump's red hats, you're surrounded by all of his supporters. It seems to me as if that would take on a heightened level of insecurity, a heightened level of, oh, shit, what's going to happen as a consequence of this? What's the mood? What are you thinking? What's running through your head when he's directly pointing at you and going, you are terrible, and all of these people need to agree with me that you're terrible? The confrontational aspect of having his people right there when he's saying it has to add some sort of increased level of fear, doesn't it?
No. At this point in time, it's all rhetoric and bullion-based BS. It's not something that any member of the press corps takes too seriously, because when you meet people at these rallies, you find that Most of them are fairly decent people. The last rally I went to, even though there's chanting lock her up and, you know, Donald's great and fake media and all that stuff, when you talk to them individually, they're not that way at all. That they look at it as, you know, let's go Mets or let's go Nats or, you know, it's disgusting that it is such, but it's really nothing more than a cheerleading chant.
So basically,
and it used to be, I mean, there are reporters who have, you know, the threats are real, and there are reporters who have, you know, have to have bodyguards. I don't, but there are those that do, and that's part of covering this White House. So the threats are real. But at the rallies, I find it not nearly as dangerous as one would think. And the earlier rallies were, but these later rallies have that energy level is dissipated. I think even the base tires of him. No. And just, you know, like, yeah. Okay.
Wow.
It's like the circus coming to town. After a while, you know, you've seen the elephant take a dump so many times, you don't need to see it anymore.
Yeah, so what you're saying is the mood among his supporters, and I would consider his rally people as being his biggest supporters, his strongest supporters, the most loyal group. And so, but they're really, you get the sense that they're more in this as fanboys, as almost like they're viewers of the TV show, and they love all the they love it when he says, "What you talking about, Willis?" You know, they love all the catchphrases and the trappings around it, but
that's exactly what it is. And Donald Trump is nothing if not a reality show.
Yeah, wow. I want to fast forward to last year when you were relentlessly questioning Sarah Sanders about the family separation policy. Don't you have any empathy? To me, is this era's answer to "Have you left no decency, sir?" Take us through that scenario. Did you know, or do you ever know, when Sarah Sanders is going to call on you or the president, for that matter?
No, you don't. You show up and you raise your hand.
Yeah.
And why they call on me, I have no idea. I guess they like the fight. at some point in time, they must, or they just feel like, but the thing is, look, I'm not asking questions that anybody else wouldn't ask and that you shouldn't ask. Like Helen Thomas told me, there's no such thing as a bad question, only bad answers. Wow. My first day in this White House, Helen Thomas told me, she's at Brian, just ask the question. It doesn't matter if it gets an answer. It doesn't matter what the answer is. But once the question has been asked, then the administration cannot deny that the issue has been put before them. And that's the most important thing in asking a question.
Yeah.
So you have to ask the difficult questions, because otherwise they can always pretend like the difficult situations that they have to face, they haven't seen before. And that's not right. So they know what they know what the difficult situations are, and every administration wants to deny that they're, "Oh, I didn't know about that." Yeah. So you have to ask the questions, just ask the question. And so that's always been my watchword here. And that's the way I will always, you know, do business.
Have you ever been?
I try to listen.
Have you ever been?
I try to listen.
You try to listen, and of course that's crucial. That's absolutely important, because you need to be able to read between the lines of what they're saying, and the only way to do that is to pay attention to what they actually are saying, to get what they're trying trying to repress, in a way. You get a sense of what they're trying to repress by what they're actually vocalizing. And so when you've asked a lot of tough questions of this White House in particular, and do you ever get the sense that after you've done that, that there are, let's say there's triaging afterwards. Do you get the sense that you've motivated them to take a hard look at this or that, or to find a better way to answer your questions, for that matter? I mean, everything from that all the way up to actually trying to figure out, "Oh, Jesus, do we have a problem on our hands here?"
Well, yeah. For an example, the question I asked where the president told me to sit down, and I'm asking about it. The numbers of the, you know, to justify what he calls an emergency on the border. Mm. Only after that did they start telling us about numbers.
Yeah.
Before that, it was just an emergency. So, yeah, I think the questions, in their best, what they do best is motivate an administration to look over the issue and see if they're asking this question, maybe we do need to answer it. Here's how we answer it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's always the goal as a as a reporter is to get them to reevaluate and relook at an issue.
You took the same approach in the Rose Garden as you took with Sarah Sanders on so many occasions. And you were asking the president, as you said, about his statistics on the border. Walk us through that scene. Were you aware that he was going to be going to you during that particular Rose Garden press conference, or was that a complete surprise?
Well, I walk into the news conferences anticipating that he is going to call on me because I'm a reporter with a question.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the chutzpah to believe that I'm going to ask a good question.
Yeah.
So I know he likes to mix it up. I've noticed in the past that he has called on me and Jim Acosta, usually in tandem, in speaking with Sam Donaldson, my friend and mentor. You know, Sam said he does that because he wants to show his base. See, there's the, I took on the mean media. I took on the fake news. There's two. And so, yeah, you represent something that he wants to push back against. That's fine. The reason why he calls on me. I'm going to take advantage of him calling on me to ask what I think is a coaching question and an important question. His game is his game. I can't, you know, anticipate or judge or jump to any conclusions. I can only ask a question. So if you call on me for whatever reason, I'm going to ask you what I consider to be a fair and tough question.
Yeah. And what's going through your head? He's starting to yell at you. He's saying, you sit down, that's enough. And he's really...
Well, if you go back to that East Room again, yeah. All right, so the confrontation I had with him in the Rose Garden, he called on Jim first. Jim got him pretty pissed. And then he called on me.
Yeah.
In the East Room, he called on me first, and I got him pretty pissed, and then he called on Jim. So I think there is a definite method to the madness. And so when he called on me, and I tried to ask him a question, he interrupted me, and I said, well, let me finish. Let me ask the question, please, sir. I don't get upset, and I don't get engaged. I'm not going to battle him. Because that's not my job. My job is to ask questions. So I try to continue. And if you go back and you look at that that interchange between me and the president, he was saying some things that were patently false.
Right.
About, you know, being on the border and all this violence and, you know, just a mile away from him. Well, I was there, and it wasn't a mile away. It was 150 miles away. So I could have devolved into just a rank argument with the man, but that's not my job. My job was to ask him the question. And the question I wanted answered actually followed Jim's question and Peter's and a couple others who had asked about statistics, and it was about the statistics that I wanted an answer. So I ignored the bombast, and when he calmed down, I went after the question again. He couldn't provide an answer. In fact, his answer, if you look back at that tape, there was a shot of me, my eyes got real big and wide because I was like, what did I just hear? That was just unbelievable.
And in those scenarios, do you feel at all intimidated by the president, or are you just kind of doing your job and not really taking the...
Well, I'll tell you this much. There were two people that could intimidate me, God and my father. My father is dead, and God seems to be letting me breathe, so I, you know, My wife says I can intimidate you too, and that's true too. All right, I'll give her that one. But the rest of the world, get in line. Yeah. I'm not here to be intimidated. I'm here to do a job.
And so afterwards, does it take? I mean, I imagine that you just, because you strike me as someone who just plows forward. You just keep your head down and you move forward. You're not afterwards, kind of trying to milk it or make a big deal out of it.
No, man. If you want to know what I really am, I'm a former high school football coach, defense, middle linebacker. You plow ahead when the job's done, you wait for the next down, and you go back in.
That's right.
There's anybody who thinks that we're here for the glorification of ourselves is just plain wrong. And that's the administration's angle. Oh, you're just trying to get more TV time. Oh, you're just trying to make a name for yourself. No, I'm just trying to ask a question. And I've said this on a number of occasions to the president, to Kellyanne Conway, to Sarah. It's like, why do you always make it about us? Yeah. You're the ones who make it. I'm just here. The first time I ever had a confrontation with this administration was 2 years ago in the briefing room. It was one of Sarah's first briefings, and she wanted us to look at a piece of fake media and accused us of being fake media. And I go, look, you know, why do you always come after us? Why do you try to put us in the story? I said, you could turn any one of us here are replaceable. We're just doing our job. We're just asking you a question.
Yep.
Any one of us in this room, you can turn the channel. You can read somebody else different. But we're stuck with you for 4 years. So answer the questions. We're there to ask the questions. You're there to answer them.
That's
and
right.
She got all upset. I'd said my piece, and I was done with it. But that's the point. We're not there for us. It's not the greater glorification of. If I want to glorify myself, come out and see me play, you know, rock and roll music. That's where I, you know, that's for me. I have fun that way. But
wow, so you're also a musician, huh?
Yep.
Wow. So, and do you have a band? You guys gig around?
Because, yep.
You know, the reason I ask is for my podcast, I use independent recording artists as bumper music. And then I do a kind of a count, like a Casey Kasem countdown show at the end of the month. So if you guys have any recordings, holy hell, I would love to play Brian Karam's band on my show.
Go to www.rhythmbanditsband.com.
There you go.
And that's
all right.
That's our website.
Perfect, perfect. I'm going to have to check that out. And so I have your permission to play your music on the show?
Sure.
Outstanding. All right. Well, that's super cool. What do you play? What's your instrument?
I'm the lead singer.
You are the lead singer. Holy hell. So your voice is your instrument. That's amazing. And you've been doing this for how long?
Oh, off and on since high school.
Oh, my God.
Junior high.
So defensive coach. Football reporter, intrepid White House correspondent, and also lead singer of a band. Man, you're like a Renaissance man.
And author of 6 books.
An author of 6 books. There you go. What's your? Are you working on a new one? You have to be, right?
Yep. It's called Just Ask the Question.
Now, I just have. Speaking of questions, I just have a couple more questions for you. I don't know if you're short on time or what, but when you travel with the president, what's the climate on Air Force One with the president on board?
Well, I haven't been on Air Force One with this president, so I couldn't tell you.
Really?
I'm not in the pool, and then I'm not on the travel pool. So I would, unless invited to be on Air Force One, I wouldn't be on Air Force One.
I see.
And I think that this president probably would not invite me.
Why do you say that, Brian Karam?
I don't know. I just get a feeling. I'd love to be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
Anytime the President of the United States wants to sit down and have an extended conversation with me, I would be happy to have it.
Wow. Well, yeah. But what do you hear in terms of the pool itself? I mean, you talk to those guys and say, what's it like?
Well, for the people who work for them, the longer trips, they feel like they're trapped.
Yeah, I imagine.
It's almost like being imprisoned.
Yeah.
For the press, it's always as it has been. I mean, I have been on Air Force One, but I mean, not, you know, in a very long time.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, you get on, you get in the back of the plane, you get on a flight, you get off. Sometimes they come back and talk to you. Sometimes they don't. The food's nice. The seating's nice. It's better than first class. You relax. You enjoy yourself. You get off. That's it.
So does the mood lift in the West Wing when the president's out of town?
I think the mood lifts in the country, but that's just me.
What, and just generally speaking, though, what is the atmosphere in the West Wing in this administration as opposed to previous administrations? Because all we hear about is just perpetual
stress.
Chaos. Yeah, stress and chaos. Yeah.
A lot of stress.
Yeah,
the whole thing is stressful.
Right.
For members of his staff, they make things more difficult than they need to.
Mm-hmm.
For members of the press, it's like dealing with kids a lot of time. It's a very difficult situation. There was a famous, I think it was in, on Huffington Post about a year ago or 6 months ago, an article that I loved. And it was like, Donald the Fascist, will be saved. We'll be saved from Donald the Fascist by Donald the Incompetent.
Wow.
And I've just never seen a group of people, if they actually knew what they were doing, they would be far more dangerous, but they're just not that good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my biggest concern, Brian, is that the next iteration of Trump is going to come in and they're going to be smart. Suddenly we're going to have smart Trump, competent Trump, and then we're really screwed.
You're assuming that there are smart or competent politicians in this country. And brother, I haven't seen that yet.
Well, I'm thinking more in terms of smart indicating conniving than, so, well, I guess Trump is pretty conniving too.
Conniving. Yeah, I have never met a politician that isn't conniving. I honest to God, I mean, to some extent, they all are. You know, there's an old saying by H.L. Mencken that I think holds, you know, true. It is, you know, politicians do not help the commonwealth. They prey on the common weal. It is to the best advice for all of us to hold their powers to an irreducible minimum and their compensation to next to nothing.
Yeah,
that's exactly how I feel about all politicians.
Right.
And that's the Congress, the Senate. There are, with few exceptions, and there are some people that I like individually that do a good job. And regardless of party, I would, you know, I think they try hard. John McCain was one of them. Jamie Raskin is one of them.
Yeah.
And now whether or not you agree with their policies, I think that they were people who were trying to put country above self.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, I find that most people in the Senate and most people in the House, and when it comes to Mitch McConnell, doubly so, I think Mitch McConnell is there only for himself, doesn't care about anything. And I think most congressmen are that way too. And if you want to see what the upcoming generation is, look at Matt Gaetz. Here's a spoiled rotten little kid who, you know, who's still busy going after cheerleaders and doesn't understand that he represents and doesn't even know the history of the United States enough to take on someone like John Dean. So it's very disparaging.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned as a reporter, to see what passes off as politicians these days.
Right. Well, and to be more specific, you know, I get the sense that Donald Trump doesn't think very strategically. Everything is transactional. Everything is immediate. It does. He's not playing three. You don't get the sense that he's playing three level chess of some sort, do you?
I don't think he can spell three level chess. How's that?
All right. Well, that answers my question. Ultimately, though, on a pretty serious note, do you think the presidency recovers from this guy? Do you think the presidency recovers from this Mad King, you know, kind of?
I think the Constitution is a remarkable document.
Yeah.
I think this country is amazingly resilient. And I think if you want this country to heal from the wounds that we have given ourselves, that we must first educate people better than we do. Secondly, you've got to end the gerrymandering of districts. Third, you've got to get out, and the minimum thing that you should do is vote.
Yeah.
The minimum requirement to be a member of this republic is to vote. Everybody's worried about soccer practice. Everybody's worried about their dentist. Everybody's worried about groceries. But you know what? You'll worry less about those if you spend just a little bit more time getting involved at the school board level, at the city council level, at the county council level. Those people make decisions that affect you directly every day. The state legislature should not be, and I've gone to meetings at state legislatures where there's nobody there.
Right.
And so government is going to do what government does. But if you want things to go differently, you got to show up and be involved. And
absolutely,
you have to support reporters. You have to support them.
Mm-hmm.
That there's no other way around that.
Yep.
And today, there are whole parts of government that go unreported on because there aren't any reporters to do it.
And there's a reason why the press is the only industry listed in the First Amendment. I mean, there's a very specific reason why that is. And it's because the founders saw extraordinary value in what you do. And in order to maintain a republic, you guys have to keep doing your job. Let me ask you before I let you go, Brian, do you have a set of questions ready to go for today? I know there's a press conference coming up in about an hour.
Always.
Yeah.
Always have a top four or five.
Yeah. Can you tell us like one or two of the questions or all of them?
Well, mine are conditional on what is said and what he says. And I go in, like I said, I go in with a list, but I adapt to the moment to hear what he has to say. And I sure would like an answer or an explanation of what he told me yesterday when he said he, you know, he's not going to use the CIA to go after North Korea.
Wow.
I think surveillance of North Korea through the CIA is important, so I'd like him to clarify that statement. But that's probably what's foremost on my mind right now.
Wonderful. We'll have to keep an eye out for that. So, Brian, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. Keep sticking it to these crooks. Journalists like you are on the front lines, especially now. And speaking for myself, I want you to know how grateful we are to have you on the wall. Thank you, Brian, and thank you for your service to this country.
Well, thank you very much. Anytime.
We'll talk to you soon. We'll see you on Twitter.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye.